I'm not wearing it.
Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everybody to the study session of May City Council for Monday, August 25th. We'll begin. Item number one on the agenda is to review the agenda for tonight's City Council meeting. Start with page two. Councilmember Higgins.
It's actually a question for Councilmember Kavanaugh for 4A. Is that okay with you?
I have some questions on that.
Okay.
Councilmember Kavanaugh, go ahead.
And Ms. Spinner is going to help me out with this. This is a teenage dance hall application, which is something that I think rarely comes before the city. As I can recall, we may have only had one prior license dealing with the Nile Theater years ago when I was in council previously. And this one, I just had some questions. This particular application has limited hours of operation that are proposed. And as I understand our city code, once you receive a license, the code itself actually permits more expansive hours. And my question is, could the applicant, even if the council approved this application and the applicant wanted to expand to 5 days a week or the maximum number of hours permitted under the city code, could they do that without coming back to the city council?
Mayor, Councilmember Kavanaugh, there is nothing in the code that says that if they want to change a portion of their application, they have to come back to council. I think you can ask the applicant if they will commit that they will not change their hours of operation without coming back to council. The question is that enforceable in court? And I don't think that issue has ever been presented to the court, so I can't give you a definitive answer on that. But you are correct that our code does not require that once they receive a license, that if they're going to change something, they would have to come back to the council. The code itself, as you said, does set out the hours of operation, and as long as they are operating within the time frame set forth in the code, I think they are meeting the intent of the license.
And I have another question with regard to off-duty police officers. This application indicates that they would be requesting the use or having an off-duty police officer there. I understand the police chief has discretion on whether or not an off-duty police officer would actually be required for operation there. Am I correct or not on that?
Councilmember Kavanaugh, you're correct. It does say that in terms of the security plan that the chief of police, when he or she deems it necessary, they can require that they have a reserve police officer on the premises. In this case, in their application, it does contain that provision. I do know that Tim's talked to the police department, so he can tell you what their response has been to that issue.
Yes, and my understanding is from the police department that that they will take and evaluate that and have at least one, if not two, police officers there, depending on what they feel is appropriate.
Thank you.
Councilmember Higgins?
Is there a possibility of like we do a development agreement with a developer, similar with this business, a business agreement that these are our set hours, and if we choose to change them, we have to come back before the council again or some type of
I'm sorry, Councilmember Higgins. We typically would not put that in a development agreement. However, I think you can ask the operator today if they are willing to commit that if they want to change their hours of operation, they will bring it back to council before they do that. And you can condition your license on that avowal. The question that's undetermined is if they go ahead and violate that agreement, can we take them to court and can we revoke their license? That issue's not been presented to the court in the past. However, if they are telling the council they're agreeing to that and council stating that that is the basis upon which they're granting the license, it may be considered enforceable by the court.
And that's the situation where the hours or whatever restrictions are on the license or on the stipulation differ or are more restrictive than what's in the ordinance.
That's correct, Mayor.
Okay.
It's just the elite.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
And Ms. Spinner, would that be appropriate for the applicant to tell us here at the study session, or would it be more appropriate just to take it off the consent and have the applicant do it at the meeting upstairs?
I think it would be appropriate for them to answer that question in the study session if they're here. And then I think one of the qualifications upstairs might be that the license, the approval, council's approval is based upon the applicants avow that they will come back to this council if they choose to change their hours of operation. And that could probably be read into the consent agenda at the time they're reading the consent agenda, if that's council's direction.
And Mayor, if the applicant's here?
If the applicant's here, I'll invite him up to, is the applicant here?
I don't see her in here.
Okay, the applicant's not here, so.
The assumption council wants to move forward with these hours, correct?
I think if they put it on the application, what I'm hearing is that these are the hours that we would be willing to consider, and we would include these as a stipulation, even though it's stated in the application. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of concern that the application doesn't have the force that it would if we have actually stipulated it or included as a stip in our approval.
Mayor, my recommendation would be, if the applicant's not here now, that maybe you pull it off the consent and see if they're upstairs. I think it would be a stronger case if we were ever to try and revoke this, to show that on the record they agreed that they would come back to council before they changed their hours of operation.
Well, I agree with you. I'm wondering if they're not there, if they're not there even in the meeting, we could still stipulate it. Follow. My feeling is if they put it in the application, they've agreed to it. Or else they misstated on the application, and I would have no problem including that whether they're here or not. The question is whether this group wants to pull it off and treat it as a separate item, because I agree with you that if we include that, or could we include that as part of the consent, or would you like to?
You can include it as part of the consent.
Why don't we include it as part of the consent? Let's add that we will, the stated hours of operation as in the application is filled out by the applicant, would be part of the conditions under which this is being approved, that we would take that as they're saying that's the limitations under which they operate. If they're here and they want to address that tonight, then they can certainly ask to pull it off the consent. If that's,
thank you, Mayor.
Councilmember, that's okay with you?
Yes, thank you.
Councilmember Higgins? All right, then we'll do that. Let's add that. Unless there's no other problems, we'll add that to the consent. Okay, page 3. Councilmember Higgins?
Mayor, 5A, the fingerprint card storage unit, is there any, can you answer those questions? Okay, the question is, aren't these electronically stored, and is there a requirement for the backup system of these hard copies? If so, like how many years?
Chief Denny can answer this. I recall a memo received from a very similar question that we're required to carry these for storage for the FBI and others.
Mr. Mayor, Councilwoman Higgins, the problem is that many of what we have right now, about 250,000, the cards we have right now are hard cards. So we have to maintain those, because according to the FBI requirements and to the DPS requirements, once we hard copy someone, we have to retain that card. And the problem is, electronically, we can't scan them in and get sufficient definition on them that they can be of what we call AFIS quality. So we would have to invest in very, very expensive, high-definition photographic equipment to be able to do that. And now it's to the point that the FBI is requiring that once we print someone like this, we have to keep their fingerprint cards on file until that individual is 99 years old. So 99 years basically from the date of the print, we have to either have the hard card or the AFIS system. And so as you can see, these are huge numbers.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike. Anything else on page 3? Page 4? Page 5. Page 6. Councilmember Summers.
I have two items on this page. Item 7F was authorizing the City Police Department to work with the FBI on a mortgage fraud task force. I guess two questions I have on that. What is the mortgage fraud task force? And secondly, how does that tie in? What's the local jurisdiction on that? Why is the police department investigating mortgage fraud? Is that within the jurisdiction of local policing?
The question, the answer to that is yes. We do work mortgage fraud cases. We work identity theft cases. And what we're trying to do is, with the FBI, we recognize that we have a major problem in this region with mortgage fraud. A lot of people are being they're being hurt by this process, anything that is FDIC guarantee carries obviously serious federal consequences, And we have people that have the expertise here. A lot of the cases are coming from Mesa, and that is the reason why we're trying to participate in that process.
Chief, if somebody was caught for fraud under this program, would there be charges filed, City of Mesa versus John Doe, or would it be the State of Arizona, John Doe? I just want to know comfortably that we have jurisdiction in the area of this particular fraud.
We have jurisdiction. Anyone that we work in a collaborative effort on the federal task force, whether it would be immigration, whether it will be narcotics, whether it will be any other things that we do with the FBI, we do it on counterterrorism. We have jurisdiction at that point. We have people that get deputized. It is a problem that we're experiencing locally. We have other jurisdictions coming in on a regular basis to work cases here. And many times, these events are also tied to other criminal enterprises. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to have the ability to look at a variety of criminal things, criminal occurrences that are happening in the city, and be able to work with the other partners and have the ability to impact crime in our city.
So I know for a fact that your officers have been working with Customs and Immigration. We have programs there. While a lot of that is federal law, it impacts local level. And so we have officers working with ICE and Customs Enforcement. This is along that line as well?
That's correct. When I first came here, for the first time in our history, we embedded an agent with ICE, or an officer. We did that in September of 2006. We have worked major cases, including major smuggling operations, and we continue to do so. We have also officers that are embedded with the DEA working major criminal cases. We have had officers embedded with the FBI working gangs and bank robberies. We have two officers that are working counterterrorism. So we do have officers that are embedded in a variety of task forces with various federal agencies on a regular basis.
And I've been fully supportive of those. I think we should continue to have those kind of relationships because they do have a local impact. So
yes.
Those were my questions on that. Thank you, Chief. For your time.
And Chief, in all those instances, and I would assume in this mortgage, that the City of Mesa isn't the primary or the initiating. These are really cross-departmental, cross-jurisdiction, and we're cooperating or working with another agency in carrying out these things. We don't... Just so it's clarification, we don't have a whole unit that does nothing but mortgage fraud on its own.
That's correct. No, we don't.
Is that
we,
an accurate statement?
That is an accurate statement. Unfortunately, we don't. We have a financial crimes unit, and we work in a variety of identity theft and other fraudulent type of cases. Frankly, we are unable to handle the workload. If you look at identity theft alone, which a lot of times mortgage fraud, by the way, is connected to identity theft, it is one of the biggest and most expensive emerging crime patterns that we have. And then if you add to that the electronic side of this, it is horrendous. And frankly, we haven't even begun to scratch the surface in this type of crimes because we do not have the resources.
And in most of those, we're working because generally I would guess that mortgage fraud, other things are, even though there's a Mesa component, there's other jurisdictions. So we're working with other agencies, other departments, and other
Correct. This is a multi-jurisdictional task force.
Gotcha. Yes. Thank you. Councilmember Summers.
In 7K is another question I had. The Community Facilities District is a tool or mechanism by which we're hoping that growth will continue to pay for itself. My question has to do with the application of this. We're currently looking at some trouble with annexations, and we're going to be having some council discussion on how we bring in large parcels of the county communities that perhaps don't have the infrastructure that need water, wastewater, sewer systems. So is this a tool that we can utilize within those areas to help pay for those costs, so that the people coming into the community will pay those costs, but we're able to spread those out over, say, a 30-year period, rather than trying to implement a one-time fee for folks? Mr. Brady looks a little confused, perhaps.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm trying to think about how that would work in an area that's been developed out.
Or would it be a different tool?
Maybe it's not a community facilities district. There may be other districts, fire districts, or other types of districts that can
get there. CFD, as I understand it, would be primarily used on a before.
Kind of a greenfield opportunity.
Yeah, where we're bringing things in and creating a mechanism prior to development to bring initial type development there, whereas some of these situations we're talking about are coming back after the fact and maybe upgrading or installing infrastructure that, right. that doesn't currently exist, and suddenly out of nowhere someone appears. Mr. Rigby, you have further light knowledge. You can illuminate us on this, please.
Mayor Council. I apologize. We have Keith Hoskins from our bond council, but I think, Mayor, you did an excellent job just kind of talking about it right there, and I don't know if, Keith, if you had something
How excellent of a job was that, Mr. Rigby?
We're demoted and you're patronized.
Keep digging. Come on.
I'm done. I'm going to wait until this is over, this is enjoyable. And then I'll start talking.
I just had a question on whether this could be a tool that we would utilize in these situations. I know that Councilmember Higgins and myself have a lot of areas that are either already annexed in and need. For example, a lot of areas are on waste or septic and need to hook up, but when you try to do that house by house, the cost is just almost unbearable for these folks. And wondered if this might be a tool to alleviate that, and if this is not the right tool, it's certainly the right tool for other areas like what we're annexing with DMB, and we should pursue this. But if this isn't going to be a tool for the existing areas or areas that we will be bringing in that already have housing, then we need to look at another tool to help with that as well. So, thanks for the entertainment, Scott.
Is that adequate?
I mean,
let the record show Mr. Rigby is speechless.
Thank goodness.
That's a good idea.
Mr. Mayor, if I might just be repeating the answer you already gave, but CFDs, although theoretically they could work in already populated areas, built-out areas, they really aren't designed for that, and the procedures are such, and the lack of enthusiasm probably of the existing voters are such that I've never seen one done. They generally go with developers before the people are there. You get them started to put in new infrastructure. City improvement districts, which the city can start, and there are protest rights, but the process is less burdensome than a CFD. A city improvement district would be the sort of way that a city could put in sewer lines to an area that was right now had septic or some other, and that has been done. It's a costly process, but in the right situation, it can be done.
And I want to make sure we use the right tool, but it's encouraging to hear that there is a tool out there that we can utilize, because there are some areas that are going to be, I know in my area, those septic systems last 30, 40 years. They're 30, 40 years old now, and it's going to be very difficult to go house by house and require, because the county will also require them to hook up to the sewer system, and that's going to be really expensive. And if there's a way we can find, perhaps through the CID, to help defray that cost over 30 years so it is affordable, but also to make sure that growth pays for itself, because we have to remember that all of us who bought in the city paid into the streets and the sidewalks and the lighting and the sewer and the water, and that goes to add to the value of the house. So we want to make sure that the burden for those services is squarely on the folks who are going to appreciate the benefits as their home prices increase. But I'm also very sensitive to the fact that could be a one-time fee, could be just unaffordable to a lot of folks. So what's the best tool to help those folks along and bring up their value? So thank you very much. I've spoken long enough.
No, thank you.
Because I have another.
Councilmember Higgins.
Yeah, page 6. So 7H and 7J. I put them together because they're both in Mountain Bridge subdivision, and we're extinguishing drainage easements. And my concern is, you know, they just filed this in February of 2008. I just wondered why we're already having an issue with their property lines. That's.
Good evening. My name is Craig Crocker. I'm Real Estate Services Mayor and Councilmember Higgins. Many times when they record a map of dedication, on the map of dedication, it calls out where roads are and where easements are. Subsequent to that, when they record a subdivision plat, sometimes things overlay each other. and this is what happened in this case. And so we're distinguishing part of an easement where there's a lot is over an easement, over a drainage easement, and another part where there's a road. It doesn't affect the drainage of the subdivision or the streets or anything like that. It's just the correct property lines and easement areas and that type of thing.
So the easement or drainage area hasn't changed. It's just moved a little bit.
It has changed. It has been reduced, but the reduction does not affect the.
Well, what we're saying is that the actual drainage hasn't changed.
Right.
This isn't an engineering issue. This is a platting issue
areas.
And where lines are drawn on
That's
pages and you have conflicts on the page.
Correct.
Not in the physical layout or anything. We're just correcting that conflict on the page.
Correct.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Page 7.
Mayor, I have a.
Councilmember Higgins.
I just have a question on 8A. We're rezoning from an R16 to an OS. Once we get rezoned to OS, it's called out for a assisted living facility. Do they have the right? Not they do have the right, but can they change what they want to build on that OS without coming back before the council?
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, if they change the site plan, they'd have to come back through for a site plan modification. That would typically just go to the P&Z board and not to council.
Okay. Because, my concern is this is a nice area and they have worked together to put in assisted living and they're happy. But OS, a lot of things are acceptable in OS, like hair salons and other things that might not be compatible with that neighborhood. Yet the neighbors wouldn't have another access to an open meeting to discuss that. It would just go to P&Z.
Mayor, Councilman Higgins, it would be an open meeting to discuss the site
right.
plan. But again, we're just talking about the arrangement of the site plan, not the basic use question. That does get decided at this point with the zoning approval.
Okay.
Councilmember Summers?
And on that issue, that issue could be brought up to the council level if somebody desired, correct? So, yeah, it could be appealed up or a council member could request to hear it, I believe.
But Councilmember Summers, you're correct. But again, it would be a review of the site plan. It would not be
which is administrative and not a judicial
it's
act.
It's not a change of the zoning. Their zoning would remain O2 or OS. Yes.
The zoning allows uses. The site plan determines how that would be used in the physical layout and those kind of things. So if people in your neighborhood don't need beauty salons, then, that's or don't like them, they're in essence live with what this use allows, basically. And that could, if that allowed it, it could do that.
So my question is, oftentimes it's been my experience that site plans come through or zoning changes for an OS because it's really acceptable assisted living, and then once it's rezoned, then it goes on the market, and then it changes into something totally different where the neighbors wouldn't be notified. I don't believe for a site plan, would they?
Mayor, Councilman Higgins, yes, they are notified
okay.
for a site plan modification.
Okay, so they would then have a chance to come to P&Z. Okay.
There's the same citizen participation requirements that go
okay.
with that.
Okay, great, thank you.
Councilmember Summers.
Oh, you haven't said page 8 yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Anything else on page 7? Page 8.
Item 8E, this was the item last week that we agreed to go ahead and introduce. However, we are nowhere near ready for this to be approved. The development agreement is not complete. I don't even think the city attorney's office has had time to look it over. I would like to make a recommendation or perhaps a motion to continue this to the September 22nd meeting. I think we need enough time for that.
Usually not consent that one.
Councilmember Fenter.
Thank you, sir. Just an observation. Since we have these open meeting laws, I haven't had a chance to talk to it, Councilmember Summers. The changes, this has gone through P&Z in the spirit of the public involvement and public participation process. I think at some point down the road, probably ought to get this out and look at it and see what's going on and the specifics and maybe hear it so it just doesn't go on consent. Because there's a tremendous amount of work. I'm sure it's good work. But at the end of this, I have no idea what's going on.
Councilmember Summers.
And the reason I would like to continue the meeting on the 20, it is the 22nd, right? Okay, the meeting of the 22nd is that I'm fully aware that the rest of council has not had a chance to vet this, nor has the city attorney's office, and I think we need that time. And I might be a little optimistic that we could get it through on the 22nd. But that would be the reason that I would like to continue this, so that we have time to make an agreement and then have the council vet it and the city's attorney, because we love our city attorney, have her go through it and make her a little nervous. So.
All right. Ms. Spinner?
So, Mayor, my only question is, does the council want to place, we can leave it on the agenda, just indicate that it is for to continue to September 22nd, if that's the will of the council.
Do I have any objection to that?
No.
Mr. Gilbert? Okay.
I have a choice.
you absolutely, you have a choice. You have a choice, but I can do the math too. So
that's fine.
Okay. We'll put on the leave it on consent with the adding the continuation to September 22nd then. Okay. Anything else on page 8? Page 9. Okay. That's okay. I think we can do that. The next item on the agenda, item number 2, is to discuss and provide direction on the process to appoint a city magistrate. Hopefully, you've all been able to at least review the package that was presented to us by the Judicial Advisory Board. We're not going to make a decision today. Basically, what we wanted to do is hopefully you've also had a chance to review or at least look at the DVD, which was the recording of the interviews, the public interviews that the advisory board undertook of all the candidates, or at least the three that they've done. So I'd like to entertain some discussion as to how we would like to proceed with this. We have a couple of choices. It basically comes down to, and Mr. Brady helped me along with this, we've discussed this before. We can either take what we've got, which includes the report of the recommendation of the advisory board, the actual applications that were filled out by the applicants, and the DVD, the video of the interviews themselves, and act upon that.
You could take the recommendations from the board and forward those directly onto an agenda. That's one option. Another option could be you could interview the same three or all. You could reinterview the three that they're recommending.
The three they're recommending. And conduct our own interviews to supplement that.
So those are there may be other options, but those are two, certainly.
Okay, so I'd like to start there with how you feel about whether you were able to get a good sense of the candidates through the video, or whether you wanted to bring them in before the council to interview them personally. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, I thought that the DVD was really thorough, and because the questions were all the same, you could measure them one to another, how their answers were, and if they came in, and I'm sure we would be all over the map answering questions, may not get the same kind of not measured, but the exact question to each candidate, and be able to compare them that way.
So you'd be in favor of just going with what we've got? You thought it was sufficient?
I thought it was sufficient.
Okay. Councilmember Summers?
I also appreciated the DVD, but I think that you lose something between watching it on television and having the ability to actually question them. Even though the questions may not be the same, you get a better feel for the people that you're interviewing. That said, what I would prefer to have is to see the three that were recommended. And Debbie, I think all three are ASU grads, right? No, I don't. I think it just speaks to the high quality of the institution.
Oh.
But I would like to see these three in for even just a short 20-minute interview where the council has a chance to interact with them, ask questions that they might have that are perhaps different than these, and then move forward from that point.
Vice Mayor?
Much along that same line, having been through a number of interview processes for various things, it's good to have the committee narrow it down, and I appreciate getting down to this point, but as Councilmember Summers said, I appreciate being able to personally be able to talk with some individuals and ask questions, because there may be something that's not on that video that I may have a question about, and I just think it's a good idea to be able to have that face-to-face with the council and see how they interact with the group.
Okay. Ms. Spinner.
Mayor, I was just going to add, council, if you choose to do an interview, you can do it either in an executive session or in an open meeting.
That was the next issue if we chose to go ahead with the interview.
And
Council Member Kavanaugh, a member of an esteemed member of the bar, What would be your insight?
And as an ASU grad, I always think it's helpful to interview the finalists. I think the Judicial Advisory Board really does a very good job. The materials the candidates submitted, I thought, were very thorough. But I also like to see the interplay between counsel and candidate. I think that has always helped me in the past. And typically it's done in executive session. But it could be done in open meeting as well.
Let's we're going to move ahead then. Mr. Gilbert, I too can count. So I'm sensing that we're going to bring these the three candidates in, you know, not for a prolonged but for a short session. What we might want to do is come up with some questions so that we can, once again, like the board did such a good job on, have a sense of how they answer specific questions. They don't have to be detailed, but we can have that done. And we can do it in an executive session if Mr. Brady would work on scheduling that. Councilmember Richens?
What, help me understand the executive session versus the public forum for this. What are the advantages of both?
Well, the open meeting law allows you to go into executive session if you are dealing with a personnel issue, including hiring a new employee, especially a council-appointed employee. So it gives you the ability to maybe ask questions a little differently, more informal, as opposed to a council meeting where it would be much more formal. It's really whichever you're more comfortable with, Councilmember Richens.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Councilmember?
I don't know that there's any question I'd ask in an executive session that I wouldn't ask in public anyway.
Yeah, the process has been open to the public so far, and
it doesn't bother me either way. I think I'd prefer to do it in public if I had to state a preference. But
Councilmember Fenter?
Thank you, Mayor. The only other thing I would like to see, and I don't know if there's a formalized process, is having some input from the presiding judge. And I don't know where that fits or if that's an informal type of thing, but to me that means a lot. In any other department, we always have input. You know, a department director may have some input, but I don't know if that's a challenge or not, and I'd be curious to hear anything.
I can appreciate what you're saying. I'm a little concerned because the process for selecting a magistrate is very well defined and is actually defined in our ordinances, and we'd have to make sure that we balance that with whatever input we have.
Mayor, Council, there's nothing in the code that prohibits it. Just from a practical standpoint, I don't know Judge Tafoya's knowledge of each individual candidate. So do they know one candidate but not the other two? That I just don't have any information
on. And I think perhaps if Judge Tafoya could give us an overview of what he would expect in a judge, for example, and we could apply that if that would be okay, rather than comment on the specific candidates, because I don't believe he's been part of the process. The advisory board does not include anyone on staff or the courts or our courts, the court system, yes. So perhaps if we could ask Judge Tafoya to provide us with what he would, if he had an ideal judge, what would the attributes of that judge be, and we can apply those as best we can to this candidate. Would that be okay, Councilmember? Okay. So we'll go ahead and schedule that. As far as the e-session versus open meeting, do you have any preference for anyone going to e-session or
e-session?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Summers, or
e-session is typically how we've done it.
Let's lend toward e-session and select something else, simply because it seems like you feel more comfortable in that setting. Not that, no, once again, I believe that if the process had not been as public as it's been so far, I would have a little bit of problem. But the interviews were public; it's on the record. If we feel strongly enough that we can ask more telling or direct or other types of questions, then we'll do a e-session. We'll talk some more about that. It's back in everyone doing okay. All right. Next item, acknowledge receipt of minutes in various boards and committees.
Second.
Moved by Councilmember Summers, seconded by the Vice Mayor. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
So we acknowledge those. Hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Mayor, I just want to report on an item I think that you also attended in the opening at the Museum for Youth last week of a new exhibit on Dia de los Muertos, and I think it's a very fascinating exhibit and a very well-done exhibit, and I encourage our residents to check it out. Thank you.
Thank you, and it was impressive to see how, as they're proud that they can do so much with less, and it, you wouldn't notice because it is a great deal. Also, last week, we did attend and drove home every night the League of Cities. Just want to make sure we all know that. And I think it was a very positive experience getting to interact with cohorts and listen to some of the challenges they have and solutions they've come up with. So we did attend that last week. Most of the council members did. Anything else? Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder that this Thursday we'll be having the council strategic planning session on Thursday. It'll begin at 10 a.m. at the veranda, at the Dobson Golf Course. So it's our newly renovated area there at the golf course. So we'll start that at 10 a.m. I believe there is a...
And that is a city building. I want to make sure.
City building, absolutely. City golf course. But and earlier that morning, I believe there is a event being hosted by the East Valley Partnership. So we'll begin a little bit later at 10 a.m. And also we'll reconvene again at on Saturday on August 30th, the same location at 8 o'clock in the morning.
You meant 10 a.m., not 10 p.m., right?
10 a.m. on the 28th and 8 a.m. on August 30th.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? If not, entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Vice Mayor and second by